This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Say, PTBN, have you heard them yet? Oh, but they're so mocked out. Jenny and the Jams. Oh, but they're weird and they're wonderful. Oh, Jenny, she's really green. She's got electric boobs. The network, too. You know, I read it in the dirt. She's a hoe. Jenny and the Jams.
Welcome to Jenny and the Gems. My name is Jenny, and I'm here with my gorgeous gems, Matt and Scott and Drew. How are you guys tonight?
Hello. It is a wonderful day to be a gem.
It is.
A day to be a gem, right?
Yeah, positive. It's been a minute.
It has. We're going to have fun tonight.
We are. It is time to go back to the hidden gem section of the award-winning WWE Network. And we have decided to do a grab bag of matches again tonight. So each of us have chosen a match from that section, and we will walk through it and talk about it. I'm excited to maybe witness this stuff for the last time, just depending on how things go. So let's get the show started. Drew, I think your match is first up.
I am up first, and the match I chose is from 12/25/83. This is from Mid-South. The match is Mr. Wrestling 2 and Magnum TA versus the recently passed away Butch Reed and Jim Neidhart. And this is a cage match, and this is for the Mid-South Tag Team titles, so in a cage. And there's two big takeaways from this match. Number one, I wanted to show a match on here which featured the Magnum TA and Mr. Wrestling 2 team, which is awesome. And I thought it would be cool to have a, you know, awesome Butch Reed match as well. Mm-hmm. But the two big things about this, we get to see a young Magnum TA put up a valiant fight, and we get to see a real rockin' Mr. Wrestling 2 hot tag.
Mm. We sure do.
And I'm sure you guys noticed the dance that he does when he gets the hot tag, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Which episode of Mid-South was this again?
So this was the Christmas night show.
Yeah, it was a show. It was a whole show.
Yeah.
All right. And where was it? Do you know?
New Orleans somewhere.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, either New Orleans or Tulsa, probably one of the two.
Yeah, I think this was from New Orleans. I don't know the exact arena. I can actually try to find
Lakeside, yeah, probably.
I'm not sure about.
Might be Lakeside Arena.
Could be. Yeah, could be. But this match, awesome. Magnum TA takes a crazy, crazy bump at one point. Because the match, or the cage, it's like a Hell in a Cell cage where it's around the apron of the ring. So there's a little bit of space to walk on the floor around the ring, but there's not much. And Magnum goes flying over the ring, but it's like he doesn't have enough room to entirely clear the top ropes. Mm-hmm. So he kind of bounces off the cage and then bounces off the ropes and then falls to the ground. Very brutal stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this match, look at the team they're facing. Butch Reed and Jim Neidhart. A couple tough guys. So, you have Mr. Wrestling 2. And this feud eventually, or this tag team, of course, would eventually break up. Scott, I'm sure you're familiar with the Magnum TA versus Mr. Wrestling 2 feud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am. Awesome feud.
Yes.
And so this kind of is the very, very early stages of that, where they tag team together. Mr. Wrestling 2 is mentoring Magnum, and then Mr. Wrestling gets jealous, and they start feuding. But yeah, Magnum looks awesome here, even with how young he is, and we get to see the belly to belly suplex too for the win. So awesome match. Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna just ask. I'm supposed to be taking Mr. Wrestling 2 seriously, correct?
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. On first look, it looks like a comedy pairing to me. Giant Magnum and this guy in a diaper and a mask. So it took me a minute to realize that's not what we were doing in this match. And then I remembered this was a Drew match. And then I was like, okay, yeah, that makes more sense. but I really like that bump that you referenced that TA did. Like that was badass. He was like face first into the cage. I like how they use the cage in this. It looks real brutal. All this looks, like you said, really, really stiff and brutal. Even like the actual, they do like a lot of rest holds. They do like a lot of sort of things that are slow in the beginning. But the crowd keeps it hot for the most part, and you referenced that hot tag to Mr. Wrestling too. And I just thought it was funny. Like I just laughed. Like it seemed odd to me that that's what we were doing. I don't know. I have a problem just out of context taking this character seriously. Is that weird?
I mean, he's like a legend. He's legitimately like a true all-time great wrestler. But he was much older here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he kind of, and I mean, compared to Magnum and Jim Neidhart and Butch Reed, he looks pretty out of place. Mm-hmm. But he's like a grizzled veteran at this time. So you kind of have to take that into consideration. But to your point about the slow start and the use of the cage and everything, it builds so well.
It does.
I love that about old cage matches, is where, you kind of get the teasing of the cage spots, mm-hmm. and the use of the cage. Just like classic tag team cage match stuff.
Right. Now, lots of heel stuff too from Butch and Jim. Like that was really good. Like, and I really liked the pairing of TA and Butch Reed. They were really laying into each other. They had a really good chemistry.
Mm-hmm. So did you find it odd, because this is always a talking point with cage tag team matches, did you mm-hmm. find it odd that they still kept to like I mean there's no rules, it's a cage match, but mm-hmm. they still follow the tag rules of tagging in and out?
Well, I mean, loosely, they got a lot, they got away with a lot of the double teaming stuff. It doesn't really super bother me, because they did get their bad stuff in, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That never bothers me anyways, but I know that's some people, that's a talking point that they bring up. I don't know. What about you guys, Scott and Matt?
Yeah, it didn't really bother me any. That's a fairly NWA style thing where they still work a regular tag match even in a cage, so I mean it
exactly.
Didn't really bug me all that much.
Yeah, I mean I watched all of the Mid-Souths, I was watching all the Mid-Souths on the network through these feuds, so the whole storyline was a young green Magnum TA was being mentored by Mr. Wrestling 2, who was a babyface, but he would slowly turn heel in 84 after winning the Mid-South title from, I think it was JY. I think, yeah, he beat JYD as JYD went out the door to WWF. And he was, of course, the transition, grizzled heel that would lead to Magnum winning the title in 84. I'll be honest. The thing that surprised me, and I remember when I watched this match, this is the second time I watched this match. I watched it when I watched the whole show a while back, is that I thought WWF was the ones that invented that cage when they changed from the mesh cage, which they should never change from because the mesh cage kicks ass,
yes.
to the bar thing in 1986. Obviously, they didn't do that for lack of violence reasons. They did it because it was easier to shoot. That was purely a television production thing. I guarantee it was probably Dick Ebersol's idea because it's easier to shoot cameras through bigger holes in the cage than trying to do it through the mesh, which nobody
that makes sense.
Viewers, it does, but nobody mm-hmm. gave, no, fans didn't give a shit. Fuck it, I didn't care. You think people hated Snuka in Morocco with the garden? I can't see anything through the cage. No, of course not. Fucking dumb. It was a TV thing. NBC probably came up with that idea, most likely. But
also, the camera angle did not serve the match at all. Because no, I felt would be a lot better if I was closer in on this, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm thinking, Drew, it might even have been the Superdome and just really squished in. Mm. And obviously, it was
interesting.
It might have been a hard camera. Maybe that's why. Mm-hmm. But I didn't mind the match. I mean, everybody in that match, you had two experienced guys in Butch Reed and Mr. Wrestling 2. Although Butch Reed wasn't that experienced, but he was slightly more experienced than both Neidhart and Magnum TA was relatively new. You know, Neidhart was working in Stampede with Brett and all those guys for a little bit. So he had a little experience, but I thought it was kind of cool. But yeah, it was hard. It was a little hard to watch. It's kind of like watching a match on a handheld cam, which Matt's match pretty much seemed like.
But that was awesome.
Yeah, but no, I had no problem with it. It was a good old school match. And Drew, take this very. This is not a dig at you at all, but it's a very Drew match. So I was looking. But that's not a dig whatsoever. That no, I knew you were going to come up with something cool from that era. But hopefully, if the Mid-South stuff comes back, if it goes to Peacock, Drew, I highly recommend watching all that stuff from 83, 84, because the whole Mr. Wrestling 2 Magnum TA stuff tells a hell of a story. But the match was good. I had no problem with it. I thought it was good.
Yeah. I've seen like the highlights of the feud, but I haven't sat and watched like the week to week TV. I mean that was like after I finished all the WCW stuff, that was my next plan, was to start in with the Mid-South stuff, but alas.
Yeah, we'll see. But I like the match. I thought it was good.
All right.
Matthew? Well, what about Matthew?
Well, what about Matthew?
What about Matt? I'm kind of in the same boat as Scott. There were parts of it that, I'm not going to lie, bored the shit out of me. But I think the crowd...
Ooh.
I said what I said. The crowd helped it quite a bit. And I think there were parts where Mr. Wrestling 2 looked in, a little bit in over his head, given the advanced age of him. But... yeah, it was perfectly fine for what it was, and like Scott said, the camera angle was rather tough to watch. Like I assume Magnum TA was cut open at some point, but like I kind of had to like zoom in and squint, kind of figure out if he really was or not. But yeah, I mean, it was perfectly fine, and I thought the finish was really good. So, but yes, I will also say this is very much a Drew match.
I take that as a compliment.
You should.
Yes, you should. Absolutely.
Well, from a very Drew match to a very, very Jenny match. Here we go. We're going to April 4th of 1993, WrestleMania 9. We're going to a dark match. So if you want to watch this one, which of course you do, you have to go to the Hidden Gem section and then go to dark matches, and it'll be on there. It is Papa Shango versus El Matador. Do we say Shango or Shango?
Shango.
I've always said Shango, yeah.
Okay,
Shango.
Sounds way better that way. Anyway, and it is the first Jim Ross called match. So it was featured probably for that reason, and for, I guess, being a dark match of WrestleMania, and it is WrestleMania season, so I figured, why the hell not? And I love WrestleMania 9. And we covered Road to WrestleMania 9, so it all ties
in. We did, and you were going to watch WrestleMania 9 after, because you hadn't seen it before, correct?
Right, I did. And I watched it, like, probably twice since then.
Yeah, and you like it, right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yes, I can see... I think that's a very Jenny show.
It's a very Jenny show. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Just like this match. So it's, of course, an outdoor mania, which I think it looks cool. This is a very cool setting at Caesar's Palace. The crowd is, you know, pretty into this for a dark match, I felt like. They added a lot to it. I think that Papa Shango has a cool gimmick. you know, like a little voodoo thing. I think that's cool. I think he looks the part. I mean, he's a big guy, kind of scary looking, and got the face paint going, and you know, he looks awesome. Tito looks awesome. I love his gear. He has gold and pink on. He has a pink scrunchie in his hair, rocking that little ponytail. So they look like they belong in this outrageous WrestleMania setting to me. And Papa like kicks the ring attire out of the corner there as Tito takes it off, you know, so he gets, you know, a lot of attitude coming from him early in the match. So JR is getting adjusted to like what is happening, I guess, and his equipment, because he's talking to somebody who's talking back in his ear. So he's like coughing, and he's like, where's the mute button on this? So he sort of struggles through this match, which I kind of enjoy. I don't know. You know, he's just like really, I don't want to say green JR, because of course he's not green in 1993, but like he seems a little bit out of his element. So it's interesting to listen to. So early in the match, Tito goes for a crossbody, but Papa rolls him up by the tights. The ref stops him by that. I was like, oh, that was a very quick dark match, but the ref caught him. Tito tries for his own quick roll up and gets two on that. He works the arm for a little bit. Shango goes for a drop kick, but Tito holds on to the rope and causes him to miss. He hits with a thud on that missed drop kick. Sounds pretty great. JR is like coughing, clearing his throat at this point. It's sort of weird, but funny to me. Papa throws Tito out by his hair onto the floor and then slams him on the outside. Tito gets two on the sunset flip after that. Papa rakes the eyes, puts his head down on the whip, and then Tito gets two on the inside cradle. Fun little hot segment there. Papa attempts the backslide. It looks like a backslide he was going for. And then Tito blocks it. Tito pumps the crowd up by calling for his favorite maneuver. And then I was trying to think of what it was because I didn't know what it was. And then JR says, Bruce, tell me what that move is because I don't know what it's called. Like asking for help on the commentary. I don't know. Just funny to me. Again, and I was like, okay, good. I'm glad at least JR doesn't know, and I'm not the only one who doesn't know what that move was. Papa gets the vertical suplex on Tito, and then goes for the top elbow, and gravity happens. His foot slips. Something happened. He did not land that move, and Tito rolled him up and got the win. I don't know if there was a planned ending that was different from what happened, or if he fucked himself up when he missed that elbow or something, but it was like very abrupt ending. I could see it going either way. Like there was supposed to be a little bit more, maybe, I could see, because I was enjoying the match quite a bit. So a little bit of an abrupt ending, but I really like this. You know, I just think it's a fun atmosphere, and you know, two guys that were giving their all in a dark match. It was great stuff. What did you think, Matt?
Yeah, I thought before the absolutely horrific finish this was pretty good, to be honest. Yeah. So good, in fact, that I think they could have found a spot for this on Mania 9 proper,
That's
to be honest.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was going to ask you guys.
And that. I'll tell you, having just watched WrestleMania 9 for Wrestling's Chicken Salad, which you can listen to right here on the Wrestling Feed, cheap plug, I could tell you that this is probably better than half the matches on that show. And I know Mania 9, you know, it's an atmosphere thing, right? Like, I really like the atmosphere of Mania 9, too. But some of those matches are just, my God, absolutely horrible. Yeah, like, if I know we don't do star ratings on this show, but if I had to give the star rating for this, I'd probably go, like, 2. Which, again, still better than half the matches on WrestleMania 9. So, but yeah, I enjoyed this quite a bit, and Shango didn't so much jump off the top rope as he did just kind of fall, like you mentioned, and then it just ends. So, like you said, I wondered the same thing, if they had another planned finish, or if Shango got hurt when he crumpled to the mat or something, but yeah, I thought this was pretty fun for what it was, and for a dark match. I mean, it's usually you don't see stuff like this out of a dark match, so yeah, pretty energetic.
What do you think, Scott?
I love the match, actually. I can give it five. No, I'm only kidding. I'll give it 2.5. I mean, look, Tito's Tito. He's a Mania veteran. I honestly don't see why this match needed to be on the pre-show. Well, there wasn't a pre-show, I guess. Had to be a dark match. I mean, it's WrestleMania. Since when do we give a shit about the length of a show? WrestleMania 4 was like 11 hours, so I don't see what the big freaking deal is.
32 is still going.
32 is still going. Yes, I was waiting for the 32 joke from somebody. There it is. And it's funny, Jenny, that you picked this match because we did see the rare alternate gold tights of Tito during his element. Because most of the time, Tito wore green tights when he was in his El Matador gimmick, and he wore the alternate WrestleMania gold tights. So I thought that was kind of neat. That kind of came out of nowhere.
It looks really good.
Yeah, it does. He does. I was very impressed with that. And the crowd was pretty hot. I thought they were into it. JR definitely, I don't want to say he was nervous. Like you said, Jenny, he's not a guy that he's not Todd Pettengill, who never did wrestling in his life before 1993.
Right.
Even though we love Todd. But, JR had no clue of the WWF way of doing things. I mean, in his time in both Mid-South and in WCW, it was very map based. You didn't have, except for like the Ding Dongs and fucking, you know, Norman the Lunatic or whatever. You didn't get a ton of goofy gimmicks in WCW at that time in, you know, 88 through 92. So Papa Shango was definitely not a gimmick that he's used to, but Tito, obviously, always a good hand. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the match, and I thought, I'm sure he was a little uncomfortable, and I think they realized that this match was not live, so JR didn't really have to care whether he was hacking away or not knowing what the hell things are. It's like I don't think he gave a shit because no one's listening.
I don't know, it's just funny. It's like fantastic. A real like a human moment. Like, and I don't know, I just popped for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Obviously, nobody was listening except I don't even think Vince was listening, probably, but I'm sure he was getting ready for Sean and Tatanka, which was the opener.
He was at the craps. He was at the craps table.
Yeah, he was with Gorilla drinking the joy juice, as Jesse said at WrestleManias 4 and 5.
He was sniffing blow off of a stripper's ass.
Yeah, probably. They were definitely at the Sapphire Club.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was really good, and I'm glad you picked this match because I can't remember the last time I saw it. If I had seen it, I forgot because I would have remembered Tito's gold tights, but. But solid match. Give Tito a payday. He's earned it. And, kind of a JR chance to kind of walk through the way of doing a WWF match because it works a little differently than doing... Because early 90s WWF and early 90s WCW are two completely different universes. So it gave JR a chance to kind of work at a different pace and have to deal with goofy gimmicks and wonky color guy. I don't know. Well, he didn't have a commentator, but, just kind of doing his thing and... I thought it was a fine match, for what it was. I'm trying to remember. I guess they didn't use it on like a pre-show or it wasn't on like the countdown. I'm trying to remember because I got this pay-per-view. I would have just stuck this match on the countdown show, to be honest.
It's weird because it had like the WrestleMania graphics on it and everything when they did the replays. So, I mean.
Right. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. So, not sure. Very weird, but. Anyway, good pick. I enjoyed watching the match. I enjoyed JR kind of hacking his way through his warm-up, match. I mean, he would end up having Bobby and Macho Man kind of helping him through. So I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Fun match to watch.
Okay, where are you at on this one, Drew?
I really enjoyed the match. It was very pleasant. I mean, I love a WrestleMania that's outside where it starts during the day. And then gets darker as it goes on, you know? So I was going to ask about if this match aired anywhere. As people who have heard me on a podcast before, I was not a WWF kid growing up. The only WWF that I saw prior to like 1996 was WrestleMania 9 on a Coliseum videotape. that I had rented and ended up, I think I like forgot to take it back to the video store or something. So it was at my house for a long time. So
You stole it, basically.
Yeah. And real quick, a funny story. I tried to steal, later on in my life, I tried to steal the movie The Wizard, starring Fred Savage.
Oh, my God.
I love that movie.
Great movie. Yeah. This was when I was an adult. And I thought that in my mind, it was because, like, with the Coliseum video thing, there were seemingly no repercussions. So I just thought, well, I'll just take it, and then I can just keep it, and it's fine. And this was when I was 21, I think. So I understood the concept of paying for things. So I rented it, and then it was on my parents' account, I guess. And they started getting notices or calls from the video store or something. And so I was going to have to pay like a bunch of money, $100 or something. And so I had this chef's hat that I had gotten from somewhere. And I was scheming for a long time about how I could hide the VHS copy of The Wizard in a VHS or in a chef's hat because I'm tall. And if it was in the chef's hat on top of my head, it would clear the scanners. So I could bring it back in to the Hollywood video and set it, you know, on the shelf undetected and then go to the desk and say, hey, I've been getting these charges for this movie and it's here. You know, I don't know what the deal is.
Oh my God.
Did this work?
No, not at all. No, I put it.
Damn.
I put it in the chef's
little
hat.
Little rascals. I'm like, what are you doing? Why did you have a chef's hat? I have so many questions.
Yeah, we need to explore this further.
I don't remember why I had it, but a friend of mine's mom gave it to me as a birthday gift. But I didn't. I don't know why. I didn't ask for it or anything. But well, no, it didn't. It didn't work. I had to.
I had
to pay for the thing, and it was really expensive.
Did you get busted?
Did you try to get busted?
Yeah, it just because the thing went off.
Oh, and then you had to say sorry. I tried to smuggle it in.
Yeah, I just told them what happened. And they laughed at me, and then they charged me the $100 or whatever.
Should have given you a discount for making them lose their mind and giving them a story for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, see, that's what I think. That was kind of my. I thought they would like have pity on me,
pity.
You know.
And then you tried to pay for your. Then you tried to pay for your fine in Burger King coupon books. That's the reason you actually hate the gig right now. So.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that because the Burger King was right across the street from that Hollywood.
Ah, the plot thickens.
I finally got to the bottom of it.
There you go.
You're trying to pay me off at 50
whalers. We peeled the onion.
Oh my God. You broke my brain with that story, sir. I don't even know. Were we talking about wrestling before that? I don't remember.
The last thing I remember, Match was Pleasant. That's the last thing I remember. Everything after that.
Match was Pleasant. And then there was a chef's hat.
And I'm trying to con Hollywood Video with Whaler.
Boy.
Okay.
I had an interesting mix of drugs tonight, and I think they just all kicked in.
Oh, no. Not drugs, Jenny, no. Not drugs.
Let's continue.
Oh, no.
See what you did, Drew? Jesus. Oh, my God. Chef's hats and The Wizard. Of all Fred Savage movies.
I know.
The Wizard rocks. That movie's great.
I love that movie. Yeah, I was gonna say worth it.
Debut of Mario Brothers 3. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I watched it recently, and it actually it holds up in the sense that it's still like a pretty good story and all that. But the child, the younger brother, who's clearly autistic, they are very very quick to just stick him in a home. Somewhere, but it's just some kind of a vague group home, and Fred Savage walks through, and there's just sad children watching TV in all the rooms. So
it's very sad.
It's very sad. That is that's not great, but the rest of the movie is good.
Spoilers, I guess. All right, so.
No, wait, I'm not done talking about this match, though. I have a lot to say here.
I got the Princess Bride, and I wore a pit helmet.
So the first time I ever went to Burger King as a child.
Oh, my God.
I was wearing a Papa Shango t-shirt.
Okay, so I want to ask a little bit more about JR on commentary. Mm-hmm. Now, this to my recollection did not air on like the Coliseum video version of WrestleMania 9, and I don't think it would have aired on. Now, I'm not a Coliseum video expert, but if they were using the WrestleMania graphics and everything, I don't know if they would have used it for another video somewhere down the line.
Probably.
That's kind of out of my scope of knowledge. So yeah, I'm just curious why they taped the commentary anyways. Maybe it was just for posterity's sake, just so JR could hear himself. It's very, very interesting to hear him sound unconfident, where we're used to hearing him, like you all talked about, we're used to hearing him, you know, have a very commanding presence on commentary, but mm-hmm. hearing him figure this out is very, very interesting. He talks to Bruce Pritchard, presumably, right, at some point. Mm-hmm. If this had been a WCW match, he would have probably buried it, because that's what he always did on WCW when there was like the silly gimmicks and like the bad matches. That's the thing about JR is he would kind of bury the things that weren't very good, and he would talk down about them, and then you know, really hype up the main events and call a great main event. So mm-hmm. you hear him, but he can't do that in WWF. So you hear him having to adjust his whole way of thinking about wrestling, and I think that's very, very fascinating to hear. And the match was, very pleasant and enjoyable. Tito is awesome. Yeah, that's all.
Before we continue, I'm going on Graham and Landy's history at WWE.com into the videos, and I'm trying to see if maybe this match, like, snuck in on one of these comps or something, and, I'm trying to look here. Rumble, WrestleMania, no. I don't think
because it's not on the WrestleMania 9 one.
No, it's definitely not. SummerSlam 93. Who's that on the cover with Yoko? Oh, never heard of him. Grudges, Gripes, and Grunts. No, it's not on here. I don't think this ever saw the light of day till they put it on the Hidden Gems. Because I'm looking at, I mean, maybe into I'm in 94 now, but I mean, they aired some stuff 93. Nah, I have no idea. I don't think it ever saw the light of day. I don't think it ever did till the Gems.
Yeah, so that's just so weird, because it sounds, besides just a couple hiccups from JR, the whole thing is it's professionally produced. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe they filmed all the dark matches back then just to make sure there weren't any hiccups. Well, no, I mean, all the graphics and everything would have been added. I don't know. That's interesting.
I think they probably just did it for JR, like you said, just so he could have his first match or whatever taped. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. I bet that was it.
All right. Anything else before we take a break?
Good.
All right. Good.
Good two matches so far.
Okay. Before we go on to our next match, Scott, what do we have going on in the worlds of Place to Be Nation?
Well, Mrs. Smith, let's take a look at the PTB Wrestling Network, which, of course, you are listening to right now with this exceptional show. Of course, everyone is unfurling their GWCW Greatest Match Ever ballot. Dr. G and I did on the Saturday special. And also Tyler Kelly and our good friend Jambalaya Jake. Jacob Williams are revealing theirs today as we're recording. They did their numbers 70 to 61. So check that out. Talking about Ole Anderson, Sting, El Gigante. Who doesn't want to talk about El Gigante? So check that out on the Wrestling Network. Also, the newest episode of With This Ring, Ryan and Cindy, watching some of the more memorable and quintessential WCW moments. And they talk about some of the great kind of unusual matches in WCW's history, including one from Uncensored 1995.
Yeah, not sure I was thrilled with what old Ryan and Cindy had to say about that match. But
I'm sure.
Own opinion, of course. I'm the producer of that show and had to sit through it, but I mean, that's fine.
You're like, I had to sit through it. Maybe should have edited it. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so great stuff. And so check it out. The newest episode of With This Ring. JR and I, with the newest episode of the Police Beat podcast, myself, he, and Mr. D'Amato looked at This Tuesday in Texas from December of 1991. And of course, this past weekend, we were all sorts of NWA. Dr. G and I did a preview of the Back for the Attack pay-per-view on the Saturday special. And then we did a reaction show on Sunday evening for that. And of course, check out the Place to Be Nation YouTube page where you can see both the Back for the Attack and WWE Fastlane Twitch feeds. Had a lot of fun on both of them, so check it out. Our good man, Marty Sleaze. Man, I love that guy. Every week, pumping out great stuff. The newest episode of Pro Wrestling Love. He continues his countdown of the greatest matches from New Japan in the 2000s. He and his buddy Mike at the PWO forums. They are looking at the top 25 matches from Japan between 2000 and 2009. So check that out on the PTB Wrestling Network. Of course, the Place to Be Pop Experience. Great stuff going on over there with Andy Atherton and everybody. Of course, the Jenny position. Always great stuff. Jenny, anything you want to mention now? About anything going on? TJP?
Right now, there's a new episode of Hot Tokes that dropped today. Me and Vanessa Stark are talking about the munchies, which happens, you know, to the best of us. And yes, there should be a new episode of Bianca's First Time. We watched Billy Madison.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so that was a thing that happened.
My mom took me to see that movie in the theater and lasted about 10 minutes before she walked out.
Oh, yeah. Me. I mean, it's rough, yo.
Oh, man.
It's a hard PG-13 for the time period, I guess.
Right, yeah.
She didn't find Nudie Magazine Day as funny as I did.
Oh,
what a square. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, excellent. Great stuff over on the Jenny position. I am honored to be on a show over there, The Journey Through Infinity, with which we need to do an episode soon. And the don't forget, of course, the North-South Connection podcast feed, JR and Aaron George and Chad Campbell doing great stuff over there. Jenny, you're on a couple of shows over there. I'll be making my no-so debut very soon over there. And then in the coming weeks, you'll have to check the feed out to find out where. Big surprise. So check out all the feeds on the Quad of Pods. We have a lot of fun. PlaceBeNation.com, of course. All the great stuff on the website, including the unveiling of our composite ballot of the greatest WCW matches of all time. Go to the store, tpublic.com, and type PTBW in the search. You can wear the logos of all of the wonderful shows here on the PTB Wrestling Network. And I got to talk to our graphics man and come up with some alternative t-shirts with some of maybe our best quotes and moments. Maybe a picture of Drew with a chef's hat on. That'd be kind of good.
100%. I would die.
Standing next to the Burger King. Yes. And Fred Savage.
Burger King Drew's out.
Or we could Photoshop Matt getting an autograph with Lex Luger. I think that'd be the best.
Yes.
Highest selling t-shirt.
Now we're talking.
So anyway, placetobenation.com, all the great stuff, all the great feeds, and check out the store as well.
Alrighty. Speaking of Matt, your match is up next. What did you choose?
So I chose a match from a period of time that we don't often talk about here, and that is Attitude Era, or just before Attitude Era. November of 1997, to be more specific, and to be even more specific than that, the week after the Montreal Screwjob. So this is from a MSG house show in November of 97, like I mentioned. It is a tag team match. The main event of this house show was The Undertaker and Steve Austin versus DX. I find this era of WWF really fascinating. Like, the period right after the screw job up until, like, Mania 14. And I think, Scott, you've said this on the Place to Be podcast, that it's not the worst, like, period TV-wise in the company history, but it might be the bleakest. Like, it just feels so... It's such a down period post-screw job. Brett's gone. Davey Boy Smith's gone. Owen Hart is in, you know, kind of in limbo. There's guys threatening to leave. So it's like an interesting time period. Mm-hmm. If you want to see just how bleak things are, just look at what the pay-per-view card was for the December 97 show. Oof. It's rough. Ugh. It's Ken Shamrock getting a main event title match and a 20-minute Sergeant Slaughter match in 1997. That pretty much says it all.
Yep.
So, the interesting thing about this match, too, is this was still in that period where you weren't really sure what Austin, how Austin was going to do in the ring. Like, this was post SummerSlam, and you really hadn't seen him on TV wrestle that much or at all. I mean, he wrestled at Survivor Series, but I don't think he was wrestling on Raw at this point. And even the Survivor Series match was like 3.5 minutes long with Owen. So that was the one thing that kind of caught me by surprise, was just how much Austin actually wrestled in this match. Like, I was expecting Taker to kind of carry the load and work like 3/4 of it, and then Austin comes in for the kick wham stunner and everybody goes home happy. But I thought Austin held his own in this match quite a bit. I mean, he was doing counter wrestling holds with Triple H and Shawn, and he looked like he was, if not 100%, he looked like he was pretty close. So I thought that was interesting, and it was kind of weird to me to see Austin from this period using wrestling holds. Like, usually at this point it's punches, kicks, and he's throwing people on the outside of the ring. So I thought that was interesting. And the match itself was pretty much your standard house show fare, but it was fun, and the crowd was pretty hot for it. And the other thing that really caught me by surprise too was, and I know this was a show that wasn't meant to be seen by anybody outside of MSG that night, but HBK getting pinned clean in the middle of the ring by Taker with a tombstone. And I mean, at this point, obviously, Shawn's the champ given what happened a week earlier. But like that old saying that Shawn Michaels used to say, you know, the Heartbreak Kid doesn't lay down for anybody. That was pretty close to true at this point. Shawn didn't lose all that much.
Nope.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I thought this match was pretty interesting. And one more thing I did forget to mention, just showing how bleak this show was, because I have the card of this show printed out here, and I'm not going to read the whole thing off, but I do just want to read off what the this was the main event of the night, but the pre-intermission main event of this show was, if I may. World champion Shawn Michaels, pulling double duty on this night, pinned the Brooklyn Brawler at the 15-minute mark in a world title match in Madison Square Garden. So if you need a snapshot of just how bleak things were at this point in time for the WWF, that's Brooklyn Brawler getting a world title match against Shawn Michaels at Madison Square Garden. So, but yeah, I thought this match was pretty fun for what it was. It was, you know, maybe 15 minutes long, and everybody worked hard. It really didn't slow down all that much, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this, honestly.
If I may, Jenny, I'm looking at the rest of this card, Drew, Matt. No wonder you didn't read the rest of it, because this is how bad it was.
It's rough.
Yeah, it's really rough. Yeah, well, if you look at the, I don't know if you looked at it. Did you look at it on Graham's site? If you look at the, there's a prerequisite before it. Prior to Brett leaving the WWF, it was supposed to be him and Taker for the title. It was supposed to be him, Taker, Austin, and Shawn in a four-way. Mm-hmm. If Brett was still champion. Also originally scheduled was LOD versus Owen and Davey Boy, Vader versus Triple H, and Dude Love versus Miguel Perez. But of course, Brett gone, Davey gone, Owen they were kind of holding back on. great. I wish we had had this somewhere. Included an in-ring promo by Goldust in which he said he dumped the bitch. Perfect MSG promo right there. I'm looking at the rest of this card. I'm not even going to bother. But I thought the match was awesome, and it was a ton of fun. I like the kind of shenanigans after with China, where she's jawjacking with Steve, and then backs into Taker, and she eats the stunner anyway. And Shawn was on his game. He felt that, you know, now he's untouchable. He got rid of the one guy that hated him. He got rid of him. So Triple H was still a good hand. Well, always a good hand, but he was still a good hand here. And the MSG crowd was pretty hot. Mm-hmm. The only weird thing about it was it looked like it's being shot on like a flip phone or whatever, or a Motorola or a StarTAC or something. But I enjoyed the match. I thought it was really good. And the mood in that company was very down because you had guys who liked Brett and didn't, you know, obviously after 23 years, we've beaten the shit out of this topic, but, you know, at that moment, nobody knew what the hell happened. And most people stuck up for Brett because they thought Vince was a douche. Things were not good. And that, yeah, you're right. That In Your House DX card speaks volumes. But somewhere in that 5-week stretch between In Your House DX and the 98 Rumble, something changed. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was just Tyson. I mean, that's another discussion for another day. But at this moment, yeah, things are not great.
I mean, the other thing, too, is they really didn't have a top face outside of Taker. I mean, you had Austin, but he wasn't quite at that level yet. I don't think they knew what to do with Austin at this point yet either.
I agree.
I think Brett leaving like that kind of threw him through a loop, and they were just trying to figure out what the fuck to do at this point.
Yeah, so. I agree. But I liked the match. It was really good. I think it should have been on, like, they should have stuck it on, like, the MSG Blu-ray that they did or whatever. I think it's a good little, I don't think it should, this match should be hidden. I think it's one that people should be able to watch.
So, I could go two ways with this match. Short answer, this match rocked. The long answer, WWF is something that continues to confuse me and frustrate me.
Imagine.
What happens
imagine
today?
Me getting confused. yeah. So I mean, first of all, this is so. Again, I've said this tons of times. I was not a WWF kid growing up. I was always WCW. So a lot of this stuff I'm seeing for the first time, or you know, I only watched it for the first time as an adult. Seeing a house show match like this with no commentary, filmed with a grainy single cam, but seeing Stone Cold and The Undertaker and Triple H and Shawn Michaels, this is very jarring for me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, and I mean, obviously you can compare the styles of house shows between WCW and WWF. They're very, very different. But it's very cool. I mean, these guys were it at the time. And they gave the people what they wanted. Everyone was losing their minds. And they worked the crowd perfectly. And they knew exactly what to do and not do. So this was awesome. This is really cool. Again, jarring presentation. I could go into something that would take us maybe hours for me to try to work through, but I won't. This is awesome. Yeah. This is a cool match.
This isn't a crock and roll, so you know we do have a time limit. But I love that you mentioned the presentation, because I feel like that is one of the things that makes this match really stand out. Like the camera angle, number one, it's like you're crouched in the corner of the ring, and a lot of the angle is like up on a lot of the action, and it gives credit to everything, because even as close up as you are, everything they're doing looks awesome. Like, it looks real. You don't see the myths and stuff. Like, everybody is on their shit, and they are just fucking pros putting on a hell of a match for an awesome crowd at MSG. Like, I can't imagine. I would be fucking losing my mind watching this shit. And I was kind of just watching it on TV. Mm. But, like, I fucking love this match. Austin, he was amazing. Like, he always is. But, boy, he was just hanging in there with everything, just whooping Sean's ass. Sean took a fucking ass beating in this match in, like, really, really fun way. Like, awesome stuff from him. He did a, he interrupts Taker's little rope walk with a low blow, and that's, like, really fun for him. But he mostly got his ass beat in this one. Just nonstop, like, bumping fun, like, from everybody. It was awesome. And the tombstone was a great way to close it out. And the stunner to China was awesome as well. I mean, I just go out of your way to watch this if you still have access to it. But probably not, but it was fantastic.
So I have a quick question, and this is something that Matt touched on. So you guys consider this, so I have seen all of this part of 97. This was like a down weird time in the promotion.
Yeah. Well, Montreal happened literally what, like 7 days?
It was like a week before.
Yeah. It was like a week before Montreal happened. So, morale in the locker room for the most part sucked. Everybody fucking hated Vince. I mean, obviously as time has progressed, we all know that everybody's ego got in the way, all parties involved. But at the time, Brett was the victim. So everybody just fucking hated Vince's guts in that place. And they either quit or, like, pretty much from what I've heard, Taker, I think the next night on that Raw in Ottawa, the night after, pretty much told Vince, look, man, you can't expect these people to be happy. They liked Brett. And regardless of whatever you two dealt with, you fucked them over. And so I don't know what you expect everybody to kiss your ass for. And so Vince had to kind of eat some shit for the next couple months, but he weathered the storm, and we all know what happened after that. But yeah, right around this time, and as Matt alluded to, the In Your House DX pay-per-view is steaming shit. So, and that was why, because they weren't quite sure what to do with the roster at the time, and morale was just in the absolute toilet. So, and right around this time is when Starrcade was being pumped up, Hogan and Sting, the whole big thing, and it was WCW's one shot to put Vince away, and of course, as par for the course, they blew it, but they had their chance. So, yeah, I mean, this was a sellout. Crowd still loved it. Sean was great, but yeah, at this moment, the company was pretty much, I don't want to say on life support, but they were wounded pretty deep at this point.
And that's the interesting.
When did they?
That the crowds never at this point never really went away, despite
no, they didn't.
If anything, they got stronger by the beginning of 98.
Yeah.
So a couple things. So this was, I think I looked at the attendance. This was like 11,000 were the attendance. Was that a smaller configuration that they were running at
no.
the time?
No, MSG, they just pretty much had open. So yeah, that match was, that's probably about 9,000. That's about half full.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
About half full.
And when did everything turn around? By Royal Rumble 98,
Tyson.
Do you think?
Tyson.
Yeah,
okay.
The Tyson
right.
stuff is really where
right.
it kicked off.
Yeah, they weathered it after, at the end of 97, after In Your House DX. And once the crowd realized that Austin was the guy, they started to kind of, I don't want to say they forgot about Brett, but they realized he was gone and we had to move on. And Tyson was kind of hot. He had just, you know, eaten Evander Holyfield's ear probably 2 months before or something, like 3 months before, maybe right around this time, actually November or October, I think, was that second fight when he bit his ear. So probably right around the Rumble, everyone knew Austin was going to win and everyone was fine with it. But that build with Tyson definitely got the mainstream's eyes. And unlike 3 years earlier with LT at WrestleMania 11, everybody stayed because the product was actually halfway decent. Whereas in 95, they're like, wow, LT and a bunch of crap. And then they never came. And then they left.
And so. Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
And Jonathan. Yes. And Nick Turturro and people playing chess and the Blue Brothers and Allied Powers. But yeah,
yeah, no,
I would
see
say,
if they had only pushed the Allied Powers.
Oh, good
then,
Lord.
Then the people would have stayed.
And Susa would just say, yeah, the Bulldog carried it all anyway. So
yeah, I was literally about to say that.
Oh, good Lord. Listen, hey, straight up, British Bulldog could not lace Lex Luger's boots.
Oh, God.
And that
oh,
is
honey bun.
Oh. Please.
Oh, boy. Thank God, Ben.
Jenny, hang up on Drew.
I mean, let's,
I was
let's
thinking
be,
about
let's
hanging up
here.
On all y'all, okay?
Let's
that
be real
was,
here.
We just...
I mean, we can get into this if we want to now.
I'd rather not.
What's the British Bulldog's best match?
Oh, good Lord.
Versus Brett? The December 90, 95 one?
That's the one I always think is the best match. I know a lot of people like SummerSlam 92, but I think the one at In Your House 5 is better.
Yeah, like an actual, as like the actual match, that's a better match, right?
Yeah,
that's probably his best match.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Think of Luger has had 20, 30 better matches than that.
You are on drugs, my good man.
No way. Oh, no way.
We all have a toothache right now.
I think there's very few people that would disagree with me. You guys, you are all on the wrong side of history.
All right. Well, listen, let me tell you something right now, okay?
Yes.
You probably have not listened, but I will spoil it for you. But on the next Talking WCW, I picked Lex Luger.
Yes.
You know, I'll have to be convinced. And that's the best way to do it, is to force me to watch some fucking matches that are supposed to be his good ones. So.
All right. Absolutely.
I'll let you know.
Can I be on the show?
No.
Why not?
Can I be on? Nah.
That's a threesome only.
Oh, make an exception.
Wow. He sounds like Grooney trying to get on a show. oh God. All right. Anyway, we've already fallen off the rails, but we got to get back on the rails. So.
All right. So Scott, you are the last one. Which match did you pick?
All right. I took a match that I think was really cool because it's two guys who probably we've never seen wrestle each other. They've been on TV a ton over the last, you know, 5-6 years, but never wrestled each other. Hadn't wrestled each other, but this one is a rare one. We're going to go to October 11th, 2000, West Coast. It's a promotion called UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling. And it was a promotion started during the Attitude Era in 1999 by a guy that one of our favorite people, the Godfather Nate Milton, would know very well, Rick Bassman. Why would we know that name? Because Rick Bassman trained Nate's favorite guy of all time. And a guy who Lex Luger usually turned on. We are, of course, talking about Sting. And this promotion was a developmental for WWE.
Rick Bassman? Is that Red Bastine's real name?
No, it's Rick Bassman. Rick Bastine. No, the actual
Red Bastine. Red Bastine trained Sting, didn't he?
No, Rick Bassman. They both did. It's two different people.
Okay.
They both did. Red Bastine did train Sting, but Rick Bassman probably helped the business side of it, kind of promote him with Eddie Gilbert and all those guys in Hot Stuff International. But
okay.
Anyway, UPW was a promotion that ran for 8 years, actually, from 1999 to 2007. But this match I picked because it's two awesome guys. One kind of in his WWE peak as he first got to the promotion earlier that year. And the other was really just coming up onto the scene and would end up making a bigger impact, no pun intended, impact, a few years later, actually in Ring of Honor before going to TNA and then ending up in NXT and WWE. So the match is William Regal versus a very young Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe was definitely a lot smaller than he would be a few years later. He wrestled with a cut-off Hawaiian shirt. Which was pretty funny. His hair was a little stragglier. He kind of looked like, and Jenny could appreciate this from the earlier Extreme Three-Way days. He kind of looked like Taz when he was Tazmaniac, with kind of the thrown, you know, kind of the curlier hair. And
I like the curly hair. I enjoyed his curly hair.
Yeah,
I
did too.
Real cute.
It is, and he was an up and comer, and William Regal was in WWE for probably a couple of months at this point. And he came here and wrestled Samoa Joe. The match is quit. Now, when I first saw I guessed on this one. I'm like, oh, I've never seen this match before. Pretty cool. I looked at the clip on the network and it was like 21 minutes. I go, yes, this is awesome. And then the match is only like 6 minutes. And I'm like, what the hell's the rest of this? Boy, was I surprised. It said in the description, the description on the network was, in a sign of things to come, Triple H travels to Ultimate Pro Wrestling to witness William Regal face future NXT champion Samoa Joe. And I thought, maybe Triple H comes out of it. Now, he was kind of a tweener. Well, he was a heel, but he was with the storyline with Kurt Angle and Stephanie in the fall. So he was kind of an in-between. But I thought he just comes out, you know, waves, and then the match happens. No, what happens is Regal beats Joe with the kind of the Indian Deathlock finisher. But it was a good back and forth match. A lot of good grappling, signs of things to come from Joe as he would advance, eventually go into Ring of Honor and just be a fucking stud. And of course, onto Impact and eventually to NXT. Regal would cut a promo on the audience, and then all of a sudden Triple H's music hits, and then Triple H comes out. He cuts a promo. He's kind of a babyface here, and he mouths off about the manager, whose name I don't think ever actually came up by the announcers. This manager comes out. Triple H mouths off to him that he's out of shape and fat and stuff. Pretty much pretty good fat shaming. And then he pedigrees him, and then pedigrees one of his stoolies, and cuts another promo on the audience, and then the music plays and he walks off. So the Triple H stuff aside, I enjoyed this match. It was a good sprint, and it was good seeing like this established grinder like William Regal going up against a young West Coast guy trying to still get kind of find himself in terms of what his style is. And eventually he would become a crazy striker and a grinder in Ring of Honor. Of course, he'd have the great feud with Punk, and then he would, of course, head to TNA and have a great career there before obviously going to NXT. So I really like this match. It was a good little sprint. Yes, the Triple H stuff at the end was nice, but that was really unnecessary. It was cool to have him, you know, mouth off to the manager and stuff. But this was more to watch two guys I really like in a crazy independent setting during the Attitude Era, cranking out a 6-minute sprint. So I thought it was a good match, and I think it's for those that still have the network for another 5 days. This might be a fun one to watch just to see a guy like Regal, who was at the time an established striker and grinder, take on a guy who was still trying to find what his style was going to be. And it would be something similar to what William Regal was at that time. So I thought it was a good match pick. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good sprint. And yeah, Joe's kind of Hawaiian half outfit thing was different. I didn't really expect it. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was going to look like he did, you know, in Impact or whatever, but it was different. It was like Taz in early ECW, not quite figuring out what he actually is, you know?
Yeah, he needed to lose that shirt. I mean, because he was wearing something under it. Like, it's just, yeah. Why? Why are you doing that? I don't know. I mean, he's not like, he's got a little belly on him, right? Like, he's not in like super awesome shape. And that Regal like dominates him most of the match. But imagine being like a young ass Samoa Joe, like having this match with Regal. Like, that's got to be pretty awesome. And they put together a pretty great match, you know. Regal is amazing regardless, but he had some really, like, stiff, like, punches, elbows, and both of them did chops, and they really went to town with each other. They, like, it was good stuff. The post-match stuff, yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah, it was. I agree.
Out of context stuff, but you said this was some developmental for WWE?
Yeah, it was. It was kind of like a West Coast version of like Ohio Valley and that kind of thing. It was mostly for like California West Coast guys.
Is it weird to have Triple H just bust in on this shit, or is that like normal?
I mean, I know that guys would go to, I mean, that's where a lot of these hidden gems are. A lot of the, like, Austin went to Ohio Valley and went to OVW. That's also on the network, or was, I guess, depending where you live. It was on the net. Austin, like right around the invasion, showed up in OVW. It was more to spike a crowd, particularly if they were doing a big local show, you know, kind of thing. So this might have been a big show. And Triple H, again, it was kind of a tweener at the time because that feud with Kurt and Stephanie, you know, they didn't really know where to go with it. And Regal and Triple H were very close, too, because, Regal kind of broke him in when they were in WCW in the early 90s. And then, of course, when Regal was having his drug issues, Triple H, you know, helped get him to rehab on the company's dime. And so they were close anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was.
And Regal was the one that encouraged Triple H to go to WWF.
Right. And he also came up with, Regal also helped come up with the pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Because Triple H was originally going to use a move that was very similar to the Diamond Cutter. But he asked DDP, I don't want to use your finisher. You know, I don't want to copy you. And he says, I don't mind. He goes, but I got an idea for a better move for you. So Regal kind of helped him, establish the pedigree as his finisher. So they were definitely very close.
And any match where you can get like a long ass promo of just like Regal being awesome on the mic is always worth a watch.
Yeah. No, he was great in this pretty much this whole like 2 year stretch from 2000 into 2002. He was so good. Either groveling like a weenie when he was in the invasion or just putting like elbows into ribs. And I just love watching Regal wrestle. I always did. I loved watching him in WCW. I have a match of his in my top five GWCW list, and that's not an accident. He's that good. So that's one reason why I picked it. It was good to see like a unheralded Regal match. I was kind of wanting to do that.
Right. Yeah. What did you think about this one, Drew?
This was cool. I wish Samoa Joe had stuck with wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
No.
But still became who he was, you know? And just this mean, tough guy, but he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
No.
Great no-sell job. I love it. She doesn't even sigh. She just goes, no. It's not, no. That was great.
Are you not a fan of Magnum P.I., Jenny?
I didn't say that. Samoa Joe did not look like Magnum P.I.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Oh, it's so great.
Anyways, yeah, this is cool. Cool match. Interesting curiosity in the vaults of the network. I fell asleep during the post-match stuff, so I can't comment on that.
Oh,
really.
My Jesus.
At least admit it. Damn you.
Well, I fell asleep during prep for our show. Don't worry about it.
I'm a little sad. I wouldn't do that to you, Drew. I wouldn't do that to Luger and Barry Windham at Chi-Town Rumble. Now, what?
Yeah,
Lord knows I've fallen asleep on plenty of Lex Luger matches. But I always...
Oh, please.
Oh, talking WCW, I fell asleep. I just can't do this episode. It's just like Luger matches.
See, I think that would be really funny, actually.
It would be.
Is you just come on and you can't talk about any of the matches because you fell asleep.
Or they just suck. Anyway, about this match, I assume your thoughts are done then.
Yeah.
All right. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I really liked the match. Had a very, very WCW Regal type of feel to it, as opposed to a WWF Regal type of match. But like Scott said, the match was like 6 minutes long. Interesting to see Samoa Joe at this point. Joe's one of my all-time favorites, so it was cool to see him here. Yes, he needs to lose the Hawaiian shirt, Drew, for Christ's sake. But the star of the show here.
He looks cool.
All right, anyway. the star of the show here for me was the post-match, for which I have numerous notes about the post-match here. You can't hear what Regal is saying at the start because the mic wasn't working, so obviously not the best of setups there. He works with it, though. He asked the announcer if he was trying to make a fool out of him. That was great. Regal called someone a dirty, filthy tart in the crowd. He then tells him to, quote, sit down, you scrub. yeah, I mean, just Regal is just the absolute best. They did end up saying the random Jamoke's name at one point, because I have it written down here. His name was Big Schwag, from what I could gather.
That's right.
The guy that Triple H pedigreed was, I quote, the drunken Irishman.
Oh.
So my question is, was this a spoof of Howard Stern's Whack Pack, if you're familiar with what that is?
I do. I am. And that's actually, you know what, Suze, it's funny you say that, because I was almost kind of thinking that myself, because 2000, they were still pretty over the Beetlejuice and all
that
those
was,
other.
That was what I breeds. Thought. So, yeah. Or like Mancow's crew or something like that, whoever he had.
Right.
But I really liked this whole segment. The whole thing was crazy. We didn't even mention that Naked Midian comes in from the crowd and kisses Regal in the mouth.
Yes.
Yep.
And Regal's following facial expression was unbelievable. Regal was absolutely the star of the show for this whole thing. So this was really fun.
And this was filmed at, or the show was held at the Galaxy Theater in Santa Ana.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the band Helloween there.
Oh, God.
In 2004.
Wow. Jeez, that's epic. Helloween. They were still around in 2004? Or was this like
a
union tour?
No. Because Andy Daris was singing with them then. Kai Hansen had left, obviously, a long time ago. But Andy Daris, awesome singer.
Hmm.
And then the rest of the band, obviously, had changed a bit, too. But, yeah, they were great at the Galaxy Theater in 2003 2004.
Drew, did you want out of that concert? That's a deep cut.
You know what, though?
Sorry.
You know what? They couldn't even play that, though. Because that's a Kai Hansen song.
This wasn't like a Diamond Dave Sammy thing where they just sang each other's songs anyway. Is that how that
No, they have more respect for Kai than that.
Hmm.
Halloween, more respectful than Van Halen.
Music, yeah. I'll be using on this episode. All right.
But they did play Where the Rain Grows, so.
Where the Rain
Grows. I was happy.
Where the Rain Grows.
All right, so that brings us to our awards for the evening. Our Diamond Award is the favorite match. I went with the tag match at MSG. That shit was hot. And I don't know. I really, really, really liked watching it. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I also went with the tag. But it was close between that and Joe and Regal just because of the whole package. But yeah, the tag match for me.
What about you, Drew?
Toss up between... You know what? I'm actually going to go with the WrestleMania 9 dark match.
Nice!
Just because it felt so light and happy. Mm-hmm. And I thought hearing JR kind of work out the beats of WWF commentary and come off as more insecure and unsure of himself, I thought that was really interesting and a really enjoyable watch.
What about you, Scott?
Well, obviously, obviously we're not picking our own, but it was close between the MSG tag and the WrestleMania 9 dark match. I'm going to give an edge to the WrestleMania 9 match. I love the tag at the Garden. I feel like that was a match that was probably on TV, and I think the camera angle just makes it more glamorous, but it was awesome. But I kind of dug JR, not in his element. I still love the alternate Tito gold tights. And, you know, the crowd was probably pumped for this match, not realizing what was to come. By the end of the night, they were going to be throwing shit. So, I'm going to give the edge to Tito and Papa. I mean, Tito and, Tito.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, Tito Papa.
Our cubic zirconia is our least favorite. You know, I think that Drew's match was pretty good for a Drew match, if we're being honest, but it's probably going
to
be...
What's that supposed to mean?
Yeah, how you will.
Wow! That was good.
And then, but I mean, of the four that we're looking at, it's just the one that I happen to not enjoy as much. What about you, Scott?
Yeah, I love those teams, Drew, and I loved that feud because I watched it on the network. I think the camera angle pissed me off and that cage pissed me off. Mm. Otherwise, I had no problem with any of the participants because I watched those guys on the weekly show on the network. But that the camera angle really killed it for me.
Sorry, Drew. That tag match.
Well, what about you, Drew?
I'll probably Regal Samoa Joe, I guess.
Yeah, since she fell asleep, probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it had the Hawaiian shirt.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, then my own match.
Oh, come on.
That's all it took? Wow.
Drew was so forlorn that it was like he lost his dog.
Aww,
now, if Mr. Wrestling 2 was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, where would you lean?
5-star classic.
Absolutely.
No one cares about cameras there.
Think about him wearing the Hawaiian shirt and doing that hot tag dance he did.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God, that's great.
All right, so for the Ruby Award, we're doing our MVP. This was kind of hard, but at the end, I think Regal just sort of does it for me. He is the standout. I mean, because like in a tag match, everybody, all of those guys are like awesome. So hard to pick, you know, a standout of those. And, you know, Regal was amazing. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, it was Regal for me. He made that whole segment. And yeah, again, pretty much what you said. Regal's just the best. So
Drew?
I'm going to go with Stone Cold. He was the most over guy in that match.
Yep.
And he totally owned it.
He was the only other one I considered for a minute. What about you, Scott?
I also will go with Stone Cold, but I want to give a kind of a half Ruby to Chyna, because she did a great job. She, you could tell in the back of her head that she knew Austin was behind her. I'm going to eat a fucking stunner in front of 12,000 people. Mm-hmm. She was a pro for somebody who at the time totally green as grass, to play that off pretty well, knowing she was about to eat a stunner, and it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I had to applaud her for that. But Austin, at that moment, like we were talking about earlier, at that moment, you knew he was about to take this company over. So, and he showed it. So I definitely give it to Austin. But a little Ruby to Chyna, because she was pretty good being the dummy at the end.
It was cool watching Stone Cold. I mean, he's a pro at that point. Of course, he's been in he's been wrestling for a while. And he's been a top, you know, top-ish guy for a while, too. But to watch him, I mean, you're in there with The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. Triple H was a little lower at that time. But, I mean, you watch him walk in and just completely own that ring, you know. It's pretty impressive with those two guys in it as well. And he's just showing them up. Awesome. I mean, you can really feel it. It's cool.
Mm. It is. So for my final award, it is the Opal, which we give to sort of highlights of all the matches. And Chyna taking the stunner was definitely on that list, as well as the hot tag to Mr. Wrestling, too.
Yes.
Yep. Got to put that one on there. Tito's tights, definitely a highlight. And Samoa Joe's hair. What about you, Scott?
I love that. Yeah, I love all those. I want to go. I think I'm going to lean towards Austin Stunner and his kind of jaw jacking with Chyna, but the Regal promo was pretty good. And I didn't realize, I could have sworn. I mean, I didn't think that Naked Midian gig was going all the way that deep into 2000. I thought it was maybe like a month in the summer and then that was it, but maybe they were just using it for the indies. I don't know. But if I had to pick one, I would go with Austin and the Stunner.
Let's see. We have JR asking for a cough button. We have Austin stunning Chyna. We have Naked Midian locking lips with Regal. And we have Samoa Joe's fashion choices. Oh, and I'm sorry. And Triple H pedigreeing Big Swag. I couldn't forget that.
Yeah. Of course not. What about you, Drew?
Mr. Wrestling hot tag. Mm. Magnum TA bump into the cage. Magnum TA belly to belly suplex. Magnum TA with his shirt off.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Magnum TA's wrestling boots. Magnum TA's wrestling stance. Magnum TA's punch. Magnum TA's hair.
Oh, come on.
Magnum TA's camera angle.
The hard cam.
The hard cam.
Focused on Magnum TA.
Magnum TA.
He's
an opal.
And Samoa Joe's Hawaiian shirt. And the gritty camera, the gritty film quality of the MSG house show. But that was something that they would show. They would show clips on like Raw from the MSG shows from that angle, right?
Yes. Sometimes they would. Yeah. They did it like when Diesel beat Backlund in 94.
Yeah. Okay.
Something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So that was like an established, yeah, thing that they would do. They just wouldn't release the full matches, obviously.
No, no.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that was a fun show. I enjoyed all of this. And as far as the future of the gyms, we're undetermined, but we will see what we can do. Hopefully we will be back sooner rather than later. In the meantime, you can find us on separate pods doing other things. Maddie, what you got going on?
Let's see. Over on the Pop feed, last episode of Piece of the Action featured Logan Crosland. And ironically enough, we watched Logan. If you enjoy Patrick Stewart impressions, that is the podcast for you. So check that out.
Nice.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. Newest episode of Highway to the Impact Zone. The gang is recording the Turning Point 2004 episode. I am very bummed that I am missing that one, that I won't be on that one, because for my money, features one of the best matches in TNA history. So check that out when it drops. And some special podcasts coming out that may be out by the time you hear this, where some of PTBN's finest live watched WrestleManias 17 and 19. I was on both of those. Jenny was on the WrestleMania 19 pod. Jenny can attest they're very, very serious podcasts. We used such a seriousness and in our analysis, and it really was something to behold. So please listen to those. And you can follow me on Twitter at MSouza1991.
Top-notch professional podcasting is what it was.
I concur.
Right.
Drew, it's like it's like a lecture, really.
It is. I mean, boring almost, but not quite, you know? Drew, what do you got going on?
I've got, I believe, the second part of my WCW, GWCW list reveal with Chad Campbell is up. That's on the North-South Connection podcast feed. Check that out. It's me and Chad talking about WCW matches. So there's a lot of Luger on there. If you want your Luger fix, there you go. So check that out. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I'm also going to keep teasing. There will be a new podcast project from me sometime in the future. Everybody, look out.
Awesome.
Follow me on Twitter at _burningspirits for the truth about Burger King.
All right, Scott, what about you?
Well, obviously, you can follow me on Twitter at PTB Podfather. And of course, check out all the great stuff on the PTB Wrestling Network, including this show, which will be back. There is no doubt Jenny and the Gems will return. We're just not sure when. But check out all the great episodes we've done in the past on our archive. Serial executives and all sorts of fun stuff. So we've had some great shows in the past, and we will be back. So, and all the other great shows on the PTB Wrestling Network, including Talkin' WCW, which is a tremendous show. And yeah, all the great stuff we have here. And you can check me out also on the Pop Experience feed. I'm on the Year in Pop, myself, Andy, Dr. G, and Mr. D'Amato. We're coming to the end of the 80s over there, so stay tuned for that. And yeah, great stuff all around.
Okay, so speaking of Talking WCW, we had a new episode dropped recently. It was on Raven, and a really fun three match picks there. Awesome stuff all around. Raven was amazing. As for me, I have my own podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. Right now, you can find a new episode of You Heard About Pluto. Me and my new friend, Tim Taylor. Tim, not the Tool Man Taylor. We watched an episode of Dog the Bounty Hunter. So that was interesting. So listen to that.
I saw him at my work one time.
You did?
Yes.
Did you ask him about his mullet?
No, I didn't, because he was coming out of court.
Oh, okay.
And he was wearing all white, and like his whole entourage was wearing all white, strolling out of court.
That was weird.
It was for It was for a murder case, by the way. So.
Oh shit!
That's awesome.
Well, we watched a very odd episode where there were no criminals at all. So it's, you know, sort of weird.
No criminals at all.
No criminals.
What was the point of the episode?
Yeah, what was it?
Okay, so it was a Christmas episode.
Wow.
They were trying to get the kids to bounty hunt on Santa. And then Tim and I created an original character named Santa the Bounty Hunter. And So anyway, just listen to that.
Did they spray Santa with bear mace?
Should have. Anyway, bunch of nonsense over there. You can follow me at Twitter for more nonsense as well. And at the North South Connection, I have TNA Never Dies and the Extreme Three Way Dance. So listen to those if you want more wrestling content from me. But thank you guys for listening, and hopefully we will be back soon.